And now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for the evening. It's Robbie W. from Wildwood.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
All right. Good evening, everybody. My name is Robbie, and I am an alcoholic. Everybody, what's up? I am from the, let's get this out of the way. Through the grace of God, the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, strong home group, great sponsorship, actually got a team of sponsors, and the fact that I've taken all 12 steps out of my big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been a member of AA in good standing since October 31st of 1983. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. If you're not good at mathematics, I just celebrated 31 years of continuous sobriety. Oops! All right, now, let's get this out of the way real quick. If you're not enthusiastic about sobriety, if you don't love AA with every ounce of your fiber, you will not like me tonight. And that's okay. We know who we are. We know what we're about. But conversely, if you absolutely love AA from the bottoms of your feet to the top of your head, okay, if you love AA with all your heart and soul, if AA has not only transformed you, but if you've been saved, if your life has been saved because of this awesome fellowship, then we'll get along good. You know, if that's how you feel, we'll get along great. Because that's who I am and what I am. I'm an alcoholic of the real kind. I'm just a real alcoholic, and you guys will know that in a few minutes after I get done qualifying. But the reality of it, reality up here is, what I really want to share about tonight when we start is that I'm a real member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what that means is I have a home group. It's the primary purpose group of Wildwood, New Jersey. Okay, we meet at the 12-step house. Some of you guys, Danny P., some of you guys come down, guys and girls come down during the summer. My home group meets every morning at 9:30 in the morning and every evening at 6:30. We also have a women's meeting Thursday evenings, and we have our big book meeting, which I chair, on Friday nights at 9:30. So if you're ever in Wildwood, New Jersey, make sure you get my business card before you leave, and we'll hang out on a Friday night from 9:30 to 10:30. No questions. Questions and answers are afterwards, sir. But anyway, it's just so great to be here. And I want to thank the group for asking me to come. I want to thank Richie. Where's Richie at? I'm from Philadelphia, so if your name's Bob, you're Bobby. If your name's Rich, hey, Richie, how you doing, brother? Thanks for asking me to come up here. I'm doing good. And it's just an honor to be here. Everybody say hi to Kay, my girlfriend. We drove up from Wildwood, New Jersey, and we're going to drive back tonight, you know, into a new car, and I might seem a little crazy. 3-hour ride to do a 40-minute talk and 3 hours back. That's crazy. It is. You're right. But that's okay, man. It's because I'm a sober member of AA, and this is what we're supposed to do. You know, sometimes Kay will know I'm with my new guys in our kitchen, you know, going over a step. You know, and that's just the way that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. It says on the last page of the first step in our 12 and 12, it says, who cares to admit complete defeat? Who cares to sacrifice time and energy for the suffering alcoholic? Who cares anything about meditation and prayer, let alone restitution for harms done? Who cares about all that stuff? Then it says, no, not the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme. They don't care for that prospect, okay? But those of us that are gathered here tonight, that our lives depend on it, that's why we do this. So reality of it is tonight, my life depends on giving this 40, 45-minute talk, whatever. It depends on it. This is not a little chore tonight. This ain't a cute thing so I look good and sound good for 45 minutes. This is a life and death errand that I'm on tonight. You know, and I hope you feel the same way about this program. If you stay sober long enough in here, and a lot of us old-timers will tell you this, you will go to, unfortunately, some funerals, and not because of old age. But you'll go to some funerals in Alcoholics Anonymous, right, David? We've gone to some. David and I go way back, and it just happens. You know, I think that I think the people just aren't willing to take the simple set of suggestions that are in this book and put them in their life. What's the 12 and 12 say? When the alcoholic has a choice between character building and comfort, what do they pick? Amen, the newcomer. Good job, Rob. And that's what I'm talking about. And that's what we pick. We pick comfort, what feels good and is easy. You know what I mean? We don't want sponsees, really, unless your ego is really crazy. You don't want sponsees because it's work. At least I don't sometimes, you know. It's work. It's extra work, you know. But the reality of it is we do these things out of a labor. I do these things out of a labor of love. Like Dr. Bob says in his story, you know, it's a sense of commitment. It's a duty. And in giving back, we so receive, you know. And my gratitude to AA is always overflowing. Always. It's never under. I have a new pair of glasses like Chuck C. out there. My lenses are completely changed because I look for the good in people. You know, I'm telling you what, you could be a crazy animal, a crazy, crazy animal like some newcomers are, and somehow God teaches me to look for the good in you. You know, because that's what they looked for me when I was new. They didn't look at the crazy Rob W. just out of prison from Philadelphia. You know, I used the F-bomb like 7 different ways, you know what I mean, in one sentence, you know, with connectors and stuff, you know. And like the old-timer, they'd be looking at me like, dude, you can't do that. You know, this is AA. We're spiritual, you know. And so I had to learn a day at a time to slow down. I had to learn a day at a time that I could get this program, that a day at a time, it didn't have to be anything special. We were at my anniversary this year. My home group celebrated my 31st. It was wonderful. And one of my good friends, Rich and Ange, he shared from the floor, and he said, Robbie, he says, the craziest thing that I like about you and what you've taught me in AA, and this might be the most awesome compliment I got in 31 years. He says, you're not afraid to be you. And I think that was a backhanded compliment a little bit because I'm a little crazy. You know what I mean? I like coming in on my days off with my sweats on, my hat on backwards, on my football jersey. You know, I high-five all the guys and all. You know, home group guys. And that's who I am and what I am. You know, and I think that's a nice compliment. Because when I was out there, I never wanted to be me. You know, when I was drinking, I always wanted to be I always wanted you to think that I was somebody else in the bar. You know what I mean? Or whatever. I never was okay with me. And Alcoholics Anonymous has gotten me to a point in AA after, you know, taking these steps and putting them in my life, you know, to make me feel that I'm okay in my own skin. You know, I'm not alone anymore. I can be alone with the world today, one of the fifth step rewards, you know, and not be alone. I can be a perfect peace and ease, you know, when I'm alone. The committee's not going on anymore. Today I'm happy, joyous, and free, whether I'm with all. And then I feel the best when I'm like this, though. When I'm surrounded by AA people, I feel the best because I know there's a God in this room. I know there's a God pretty much residing in almost all of you. That's a joke. But I know God's here. I know he's here because, you know, we've been transformed, you know. We were people like that crazy mind and body. We were nuts, you know. I'm not going to ask anybody to raise their hands. You know, we've been to jails and prisons and rehabs and psych wards and gospel missions and soup kitchens, right? Sleeping on the streets, living on the streets, getting kicked out of here, getting kicked out of there. And then we come here. And you come up here and you read a little something. And everybody cheers and says, thank you so much. And, you know, at the end of the meeting, they tell you to keep coming back. Boy, you're going to come to the meeting tomorrow? I'm like, me? Yeah, you're going to come back tomorrow? Like, yeah, I think so. Like, they want me back. That's so cool. That's so inviting. You know, I never want to get so sober, you know what I mean, that I'm not looking, you know, for a lost soul here or a wayward member of AA, because that's what I got taught to do. You know, I get to do a lot of this. I'll be with the speaker, one of the speakers from Vegas he just talked about, Sheldon F., next month, no, in February, you know, somewhere in Wisconsin, I think, right? You know, I meet all these people because I stay sober and I work the program. I live the program that I get asked to do some of these cool things, you know. But I don't look at that as anything special. I get on a lot of those CDs. I don't think that's anything special. I think it's just as special to the guy that came here and put the coffee on. I think it's just as special as Roy and Randy that I met before the meeting. And Dave, we talked about football. Ah, it was great, dudes. That was fun. Redskins, keep coming back, dude. Roy was like, I'm a Redskin fan. Sorry to hear that. Make sure you share at the next meeting. But, so we're here. We're in AA tonight. And tonight I get a chance to talk about two things. Neither of them about me. I don't think that's funny when a speaker says, oh, I'm talking about my favorite subject, me. Not funny. I think the two things that I want to share about tonight for the newcomer, I want to talk about God and I want to talk about AA. And it's just that simple. And if you listen to my experience, Truth and Hope, you'll see that there's a God at the end. and you'll hear a lot about AA. I will quote the book. I will quote the book, and I will quote page numbers. And honest to God, if that bothers anybody here, just call your sponsor afterwards. I don't make no excuses for that. This is my life. This is my lifeline. I'm not quoting pages to impress anybody here. I'm quoting pages because I know what's in there. I know where it's at. And I know when I need to go to 77 and reminded, what am I here for? My job is to be a maximum service to God and others. I know that. You see? I know Bill Wilson says on page 16, you know, there's a vast amount of fun about this thing. And there's a vast amount of levity. But then he says, but just underneath it is a deadly earnestness. You see, I get all that stuff. I know, I got to know what's in here. I don't know what's in here to impress you. I know what's in here so I can live and so that I can be attractive to other members when they come here. And that other big book, you know, it talks about two things. It talks about knowledge and wisdom. Knowledge is great, it says in Proverbs. Oh, it's a great thing to know all the knowledge in this book. But without the wisdom, without taking this knowledge and putting it in our lives, it's worthless. So it doesn't matter what I know in here. Okay, but how am I living it? How am I treating my girlfriend? How am I treating my little daughter? Huh? You know, how am I treating my mom? You saw how I treated my mom this weekend. How am I treating my little sister? You know, how am I at work? How am I with newcomers? You know, how am I with the person at 7-Eleven or Wawa? You know, or the gas station attendant? I'm so nice to gas station attendants. I just think they're the best thing, man. You know, and that's because that's who I am. You know what I mean? Because we all got a little deal. I do a retreat every year for a women's conference. Tough job, guys, but you'll get it someday. I'm a retreat leader at a women's conference. And the name and what they say is be a better whatever you are. If you're a coffee maker, be a better coffee maker. If you're a sponsor, be a better sponsor. If you're a plumber, be a better plumber. You know what I mean? If you're a boyfriend, be a better boyfriend. If you're a father or if you're a mother, whatever you are, just be a better that. You don't have to be anybody special today, you know. But when you do all that, when I do stuff like that, he's pretty stoked. And I know that because I feel the rewards. I feel the happiness inside. You guys don't got to stroke me. Nobody here has to stroke my ego. No matter what you guys say to me tonight, it's not going to affect how I live, you know, the rest of the evening. You know, it's how I act in life. You know what I mean? Everyone else want to get those small compliments out of nowhere, you know, and hearing that, like, oh, it's sound. I never knew that, you know. So anyway, okay, so that's my introduction. Just love AA. I'm a real member of AA. I'm a past delegate in my area, if anybody knows what that is, GSRs and DCMs. I'm a panel 48 delegate. That means that in 1998 and 1999, I went to the General Service Conference in New York, and I represented Southern New Jersey, okay? Wore a suit and stuff and worked on the fourth edition of Big Book and had a good time. Served AA. I'm a past chairman of our intergroup. That means that for two Wednesdays every month for 2 years, I showed up and chaired a meeting and made sure our prisons commitments, our H&I commitments, and our whatever, or PCP, I almost said PCP. CPC, our Cooperation Professional Committee. All the addicts are like, yeah! Sit down, take it easy. Our CPC committee, Cooperation Professional Committee, that they're all doing their job, and newsletters, and chair of my group and all. And I say all that, not to impress anybody here, I say all that to let you know that I'm a worker. I've always been a worker. And before I became a delegate at Charles, the GSR and the DCM, I was the intergroup rep. You know, for 2 years. You know what I mean? I did all that. I was a Unity chair. I ran Unity breakfast. It was the coolest thing in the world. I got to meet all these speakers, you know, from all over that way. I would get to come in if I'm out of state, you know? And I just kept on doing that. And I think that has a little something to do with why I'm standing in front of you with 31 years of continuous sobriety. One of my favorite speakers, a guy named Ernie Attorney, said one time, he says, if you see a turtle on a high fence post, he had help. So, I don't know about you people. I don't know if you think that your sobriety is great because of all the work that you do, but that ain't my logic. My logic is if I'm doing good, that's because I've been standing on the shoulders of giants in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been listening. You know, I got a big book, and I got my I don't know if you can see all the colors from the back row, but the front row, the sickies can see it. You see that? And I have that. Because this is what I do. This is who I am. This is what the old timers were doing when I was new. I would go to a big boat meeting and they had their highlighters. I look over them, you know what I mean? You know, like I played sports growing up in Philadelphia, and I watched, you know, I watched the quarterback that came before me. I watched how he did his fake to his running back. I watched how he would, you know, do a naked bootleg and all that stuff, and that's how I learned or whatever. And so when I come in Alcoholics Anonymous, I watched what the old timers were doing, and I started emulating them. I wasn't afraid of, copying or mimicking AA members. You know, plagiarism. I plagiarized all the alcoholics, you know, until I finally became Robbie W., sober member of AA. I took a little from you and a little from you and a little bit from you and a little from you and a little from you. And before you know it, I was okay with me. And now all of a sudden, you know, I got the real, I got my own big book. Let's just say it that way. And in my big book, I found out the truth. Because sometimes you don't always hear the complete truth in AA. You hear some things that sound good, but they don't go through the litmus test of the big book. So when they go through, when I get my own book, I'd say, okay, I'll listen to that guy, but that ain't what the book says. You know, that's a selfish program. Yeah, find that for me in the book, please. Good luck. It says in my book that we're selfish and self-centered to the core, and that is our problem. You know, Bill Wilson's problem with 6 months of sobriety, you know, wasn't go find the meeting and to go get help. His problem, he had to find another drunk to carry the message to. And that was the spark of AA. Bill Wilson, when he got up with 6 months of sobriety, wasn't a miracle. At 6 months of sobriety, when he got up out of that bed in that hotel after that failed job, he was not even close to a miracle. The miracle happened when he listened to that wonderful God in his mind and said to him, Bill, help somebody find the drunk. And then a couple evenings later, in the Cyberling Estate, when Annie Wilson knocked on the door, Annie Smith knocked on the door, and Dr. Bob come in. And when they closed the dining room doors, the shutter doors, when Bob and Bill went in that room and he sat down, and Bill, what did Bill tell him about? Did he tell him about the steps? Nope. Bill told him about his drinking. And when Bill told Bob about his drinking, Bob finally opened up the doors. It said, Annie, Henrietta, put another pot of coffee on. This guy knows what he's talking about. The miracle happened that evening. And that's what this deal's about. You know, this deal's about, you know, passing this thing on to each other. It was a miracle tonight when I shook Rob's hand. And I said, hey, buddy, I'm Rob. He said, oh, me too, dude. I'm Rob too. And I was like, yeah, cool. That's when I started feeling good. You know, when I started meeting Roy back there and Randy over here, my new friends. That's for me when the miracle happens. When I come in, I get out of me. It's not about me, what I'm wearing, what I sound like, or what you think about me. That's God's deal. Oh, that's who I'm trying to. Today, I want to be a God pleaser and not a people pleaser. And you guys all know what that means, you know? And that's who I want to impress today. In our book, And There Is a Solution, on the right-hand side, this is Bill Wilson talking now. He says, we're like the passengers on a great ship liner the moment after escape from shipwreck, okay? You know, imagine that. You know, you're out on a ship and you're getting beaten and battered by the storms, and all of a sudden, and you're trying to help each other stay alive, and you're holding button to this, and you're grabbing that, and that, and the next thing you know, you end up on this island. Woo! Made it. Imagine the camaraderie, the 8 or 9 people that made it. Well, I believe that's what happens here. And that's the message that Bill's painting. That we made it here. We drank and we did all those other things. And we ended up in all these joints. And we got kicked out of all these places. And we felt bad about ourselves. And some of us tried to commit suicide. And most of us all hated ourselves, right? Ashamed of the things we did. And we get here. And we made it to the island of Alcoholics Anonymous. And isn't that great? Not what the book says. The book says, ladies and gentlemen, that's one of the powerful elements of cement that holds us together here. One of the powerful elements of cement. And then Bill says a tremendous fact is, what? That we found a common solution. One in which we can agree. Let's say that again. One in which we can agree. You know, I'm not here to go against the flow with everybody in these business meetings or in these conferences or these committee meetings. It says one in which we can agree. And join in brotherly and harmonious action. And that's what I'm into. I'm into going with the flow. How can I be of service? You know, the first step is, you know, dear God, help me. And then we finally get the dear God, grant me. Then if we keep going, we get to, dear God, please use me. See, and that's where I'm at tonight. I'm hoping I speak to somebody's heart tonight. I really am. That's my goal, even if it's just one person in this room. I hope that I can just stoke that little fire that's in you, especially if it's a if it's an ember and it's burning out. Especially if you're sitting here tonight, and I don't know who I'm talking to, but AA ain't the most greatest thing in the world. You're wondering if you even belong here. You're not too into it. Nothing spectacular has really happened so far, and you're just not doing good. And I hope that's who I'm speaking to. And I hope that I can somehow get something going in you tonight where you change a little something and you do a new action to create a new result, because I think that's what we're supposed to be about. So I was born and raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I finally got to my story. So I was born and raised, some alcoholics, they start right away. I was born in 1963. My mom and dad were alcoholics. Not me, man. I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I was born to a great family. I didn't have no issues. Okay, my mama was smart and nice. My daddy was a hard worker and a good man, never used a curse word, was a great father, a great role model. I came from the perfect family. I went to Catholic schooling for 12 years. I had friends. I played quarterback on the football team and shortstop on the baseball team. I'm not like a lot of stories in here. I'm not like a lot of people in AA where it says, you know, you're here, I was a square peg trying to fit in a round hole and I never fit. And then I picked up a drink and whoosh, my skin fit, you know? Or they like, you know, I had a horrible life and nothing was ever right. And then all of a sudden, I felt like I was an alien, you know? And then I drank and woo, I became one of you or something. Like, that's not my story. I fit in. I was hugged and loved. I was not sexually abused. I was not beat up. I was not made fun of. I hung out with the popular kids. I went to a very popular Catholic private all boys high school that was very, my boy, Father Judge. And I had friends. I had jock friends. I had burnout friends. I don't mean to point to you, sir. And the reality of it is, I fit in no matter what. I fit in with the smart kids. I was pretty smart. I fit in with the kids that said, hey, whoa. I fit in with them all, right? It was okay, so I didn't have no issues where I had to run the booze and pick up a drink and, oh, I feel better. It's not my story. If it's yours, great, keep it. It's not mine. It's not mine. I had no reason to drink on the face of this earth, not one reason to drink. No excuses, no reasons. I just didn't. Here's what I did. It's weird. There's a chapter in here called A Doctor's Opinion, right, by Dr. Silke. And he says at the bottom of one of the pages, he says, we like the effect produced by alcohol. That was so refreshing to hear that. Because I remember going to conventions and conferences when I was new and I heard these stories and they never fit in. I'm thinking, I fit in. I had friends. I had a good family. Then his daddy was in a penitentiary. His mother was a hooker in Atlantic City. And I'm thinking, whoa, what's my story? I ain't got one. I just like to drink like a pig. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, I did. I like the drink. I like the cake. I like cake. That wasn't even supposed to be funny. That's good. I shared that at an Al-Anon convention recently, and they all sat there like this. I couldn't get them ladies to laugh for nothing. And that's okay. We hurt a lot of them people. So anyway, I'm a drinker. I'm growing up in Philadelphia and I'm drinking. I hung out with the guys in the playgrounds and the parks. I come from Tacony Park in Northeast Philadelphia, and we shoot hoops and we play a little football and we get a few kegs and we have a good time. We shoot some darts in some of the guys' basements, you know, and that could shoot some pool. And, you know, I hung out with a lot of guys, a lot of wise guy type guys, and we're just, you know, not tough guys, but we're just, you know, we're neighborhood guys. And that's who I grew up with in Philadelphia. Watch the Mummers on, we go down to the Mummers on New Year's Day. We go to Flyers games. We set 700 level in Veterans Stadium. That's right. You know, we get the Southern Comfort into the game. No problem. And that's the way it is. And that's who I am and what I grew up like, right? And alcohol just changes me. I go from first to eighth grade, I was perfect. First to eighth grade, top classes, no problems. I liked the nuns. That's how sick I am. I was an altar boy. I rang the bell when the priest raised the host and the chalice. I was a good kid first to eighth grade, pre-alcohol, right? Then all of a sudden, eighth grade summer, I went to a Yes concert, right? Yeah. And on the way down, I'm hanging out with these three guys all throughout high school. Bones, Lumpy, and Killer. right? My name, nickname became Weasel, by the way. I didn't think that was great until I came to AA and my sponsor doing my fifth step says, dude, people don't even have weasels as pets. Stop acting like that's a cool name, okay? Right on my jacket, Tacony Park Weasel. And but the reality of it is, B-Bones, Lummy, and Keller were drinking shots of or jiggers of Southern Comfort out of the cap and getting drunk on the way down to the Yes concert. And I'm 12 and a half years old. I had never been drunk before. And the first time I drink, I get fired up. I mean fired up. I never drank socially in my life, not once. And I got drunk. And I projectile vomited during the concert on this dude in front of me. And if you're not in AA, that means you're puking without your knowledge. Okay? That's all that means. It just comes out. You know, you're not like, you don't even know it's coming. You ever puke during a good eight ball game? It's like, excuse me, I'll be right back. You puke, you come back, what are we? Stripes, your solids. That's a puke. Projectile vomiting means that stuff just comes out, you know, like whatever that name, Linda Reagan on, you know, or whatever her name was on, right, Exorcist. What's her name? Yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter. You get it. So, that's who I am, okay? I projectile vomit, and then I blacked out right in the middle of roundabout. Blacked out, okay? Woke up to my mom on the lawn of Northeast Philadelphia. The boys dropped me off of the lawn, and I hear my mom saying, you know, three heads going all around saying, what's wrong with you? And I'm drunk. I think she's making fun of me, Danny, you know what I mean? And I said, I don't know. And it was horrible. Cold shower. I got grounded for a while. Oh my God! Back to the corner. All my buddies were like, "Yeah, man, you're a solid guy. You didn't tell our moms about it. None of us got in trouble. We thought you were gonna rat us out and on." And so I learned that I liked that. I liked the attention from booze. I liked that effect produced by booze. And so all through high school, even though I played ball with the guys, we drank. We drank on Saturday night before the game. We drank on Saturday night after the game. We drank all day Sunday at Tacony Park at the Pavilion. You know what I mean? With kegs of beer. I hung out with a kid named Joey Nicoletti. They own Nicoletti's Beer Distributorship. Huh? Hello. And that's the kind of kids I hung out with, and that's what we did. We drank. I'm a drinker. That's my story. Sometimes I hear people up here telling their story. They don't even talk about alcohol. I will talk about alcohol because I drank it, and I put it in my body. It says on the bottom of page 58, to the top of page 59, it says, remember, we deal with alcohol. Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Right in our big book. Let's not be afraid to talk about it when we tell our stories. Sometimes you hear people saying, yeah, I don't want to hear no drunkalogs. I love a good drunkalog. I love when a man or woman tells me a good drunkalog. You know? Because I can feel you. I know what it's like. And then after the drunkalog, you tell us about where you're at today and how you're living and how you're staying sober and how you got a car with four hubcaps, insurance, and a registration. Yeah, I like that stuff. You know, that's positive. That's fired up. That's transformation. That's what these steps do to us, huh? So don't be afraid to tell your story. Don't get too sober where you're just going to talk about recovery. Okay, tell us your story. Let the people know that you were shot out too, that you also were full flight from reality, that you were also a complete mental defective. That's from the book, okay? And that's what I was, all those things, boxed and squared all at once most times. So I graduated from Father Judge High School, 1979, okay? Went down to senior week to Wildwood, New Jersey, where we live now. And everything was going good for like the first until the first night, okay? And I'm drunk. And I show up at Barbie's. I went out with this cheerleader named Barbie from St. Hubert's. And I remember knocking on her door, and she said, come in. I got my hat on backwards. I'm listening to AC/DC on a Highway to Hell on my Walkman, right? And she said, come on in. And I go in, and I sat down, and she looked at me, and all you men in the audience can get with this, or anybody that's ever been dropped by your significant other. And she looked at me, and she said, Robbie. I said, yes. She said, you drink too much for me, and I'm going to have to go in a different direction. All you girls know you say that to us when you're ready to kick, right? Right? We don't know what direction you're going in, but you're going in some direction other than our direction, right? So I don't know what to do, man. I'm sitting there drunk. I'm already half, you know, shot in the you-know-what. I'm feeling no pain, and I want to stay with her. I want to marry her. I want her to have my kids and stuff, you know what I mean? And I don't know what, but what she's really saying, people, is that I'm going to have to stop drinking, right? That's what she's saying down senior week, if I want her to be my girlfriend. And so I said, okay. And I dejectedly walked back to the hotel room where Bones, Lumpy, and Killer were. And I got back to the home, to the hotel room, and I, you know, was crying because I'm an alcoholic. You know, I'm seriously crying. I got the crying drunk. She let me go. You know what I mean? I'm all emotional and stuff, you know. And they're like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's great, man. This is great. You don't need her. It's plenty fish in the sea. It's senior week. I'm like, oh, okay. And that's who I am. And I went out with her for 4 years. And in 4 minutes, that relationship is gone, and I don't care. Why? Because it's replaced with booze. It's replaced with John Barleycorn. And nothing replaces my alcohol. Nothing comes in front of my alcohol. Not my education, not my girlfriend, not my parents, not my little sister. Nothing. Not my job, nothing. It's who I am. I'm an alcoholic. I guess you guys get that. Got home for senior week, got a job at a federal depository at 17th and Walnut. I had good SATs. I got accepted at a university called Temple University abroad in Columbia. Once again, everything was going good for 2 business days this time. On the 2nd business day, these girls all say to me, Robbie, we're all going over to Froggy's after work. And that's a tap room across the street. There was always this green neon frog on it at 17th and Walnut. It said, Froggy's, leap on in. I couldn't wait. You know, I couldn't wait. I didn't want to cash people out. I didn't want to be the bank president. I wanted to go to Froggy's. You know what I mean, Randy? I wanted to go to Froggy's and throw some back, man. And that's who I am. And at 18 years old, freshman at Temple, okay, bank teller, I go to Froggy's with the girls. They do the craziest thing at 8 o'clock at night. You know what that is. Oh, we're starting to feel it. We're going to go. You know what I mean? We all know you got to bang right through that feeling. Woo! Let's keep going. Starting to feel it. Yeah! 2 more rounds, man. Let's go. Woo! You know what I mean? And that's who I am and what I am. I'm a drinker. I'm getting drunk. It's 8 o'clock. You know, you come in and... who's that? Frank Sinatra's on the jukebox. You know, I did it my way. And everybody's just going, and by 9 o'clock at night, Van Halen running with the devil. You know what I mean? The lights are going on and off. The strobe light's out. Let's go. Let's party. That's who I am. That's really who I am. I don't do anything in moderation. I even like meetings longer than an hour, whatever. You know, it's who I am. You know, we're all different. So I'm a drunk, and at the bank, I started giving myself gradual raises, okay? That's not acceptable. It's usually from the vice president. And I'm not thinking. I'm drinking. Doctor's opinion. I'm full flight from reality. You see? I'm okay. I got belligerent denial like it talks about in spiritual experience. I don't want to hear nothing from nobody, not from my parents, not from my girlfriend, not from my little sister, not from the bank president. I don't want to hear nothing from nobody. I got this. I know what I'm doing. And I knew what I was doing all right. You know, I'm taking money from the bank without a withdrawal slip, man. And before you know it, 2 guys from the FBI were there. As an 18-year-old kid with no, I mean, I've been in the back of a police car once or twice because we had too much booze, you know what I mean, like on foot, you know what I mean, it was no big thing, you know, but now I'm in the back of a federally marked car, I'm taken out of a bank dressed like this, and I'm going to prison. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. Now, I'll tell you, do you guys remember, who's the guy, Bruce Jenner, remember Bruce Jenner to do the Cathlete? For way back when, for us older guys, you know, he had to, when he walked, he had his hair that went up and down the wings, you know. I had those. I had long hair, you know, and I had a slightly athletic build because I played football, and our coach Woody Sullivan, we always had to do, you know, push-ups and running and stuff. And I had these ice blue eyes, real good for girls in high school, not too good for men in prison. Okay. That's not supposed to be a joke. See, that's the great thing. See, if you're new and you're thinking, well, I wonder if I ever become a speaker, if I could ever get some jokes like that guy, just tell your story. Because we are some funny people. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to try to be funny. We are. Just our stories. It's okay. And the reality of it is, I'm in prison now. I got a year sentence in the House of Correction on State Road. Okay? And that whole year, trust me, this little skinny quarterback-looking pretty boy was scared for his life. Okay? Every night, I did the practicing alcoholic prayer, dear God, help me get out of this one, and I'll never do it again. Help me get away from Bubba, Jose, and Spider. I'll never drink again, Father. You know what I mean? I was religious. Guess what I did the first night out?
Got drunk.
Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. Huh? But we have found one that has all power. And that's what I'm going to talk about. That one is God. May you find him now. I found him in AA, man. Because for the next 3 or 4 years, I was just on the streets, in and out of prisons, in and out of detoxes, we didn't have detoxes, in and out of, they used to take you to the ER and make you drink something. These nurses, what I used to, data nurses, you told me what it was, whatever. But he used to make me drink something, so I puked it up, you know? I puked up all that stuff that was in me. And when I got done puking, I'd feel empty. I'd feel hollow. You know, there's a singer named James Blunt, and he sings about that song, being hollow. And I was so hollow at 2 in the morning in an ER, and they would just say, okay, you can go now. You know how they treat alcoholics. Just go. You know, just leave. Don't leave, man. Just leave. See, I know what that's like. I know when I see the alcoholics today, and I stick up for them. I see the alcoholics today and how they're treated by others, and I try to stick up for them because, you know, I know I was there at one point. I know they can't stick up for themselves. Life was horrible, living on the streets. Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm was in my body. When God finally got me this program, the guy that 12-stepped me said to me later on, man, dude, he said, you had demons in you. You know, it says they're distilled spirits. For a guy like me and for most people here, they're not good spirits. You know, today I look for the spirit within other people. And that's a good spirit. I look for the God in you. You know, that's what I got taught by Chuck Chamberlain. And I got taught that by Dr. Paul in the Big Book. And I got taught that by Clancy I from California. And Pastor Ed M. And all these, you know, Bob D. from Vegas. And all these people I've gotten to know. And today I realize that I don't have to be that devil, you know, that Tasmanian whatever running through people's lives, that tornado roaring through people's lives, ripping up their lives like it's nothing. I want to drink. I don't care. Don't get in my way. I don't care how bad you are, how tough you are, or what you say, because you're going to go to sleep later. I don't care. I'll get you. And that's who I am, and I would. Alcohol. I was crazy. It says in this book, an alcoholic in his or her cups is a what? Unlovely creature. And I was a real unlovely creature. Trust me. And you guys, most of you people get that. I know, you know what I mean? That's who we are. We don't care about nobody or nothing. Getting another drink. I'm going to get mine. If I get in your way, get out of my way. Or you're going to get run over. And that's how it is. Or sometimes I get beat up or locked up or whatever. That's part of the deal. I'll take it. My life was just so bad. I was so hurting. There's times where I was wanting to kill myself in these mental hospitals. There's time in the rehab where I tried to jump out a second-story window. A second-story window. I ended up in a dumpster. How appropriate, you know? How appropriate. There was a time in Chester County Farms Prison. I was in Chester County Farms Prison, and I was so bad. I was emptying my cell of water and all kind of other things and just doing nasty things with the correction officers. And they came to my cell, and they had what's called a cell extraction, and they were extracting me. Yeah, just like on Locked Up, no different, although I was so shot out. You know what I mean? Come on in, you know? Really? Really, dude? These guys, like, there's always more guards than there is inmates, you know, always. And that's what was always my case, because usually the inmates stayed away from a guy like me. I was not a guy, if you were doing time, you didn't hang out with me because I made you do hard time. You weren't doing easy time with me. We weren't going to the library and reading about, you know, Tao or anybody. We were, you know, I was living bad. I was a jitterbug. These guards took me out of that cell. I ended up naked and beaten within an inch of my life. I ended up on this is always at the end of my story. I ended up in the last cell on the block, and it's called the hole. And in that hole, it was the corner cell on maximum security of a minimum security prison. Trust me, I was only in there, by the way, for stealing salami and cheese from Hickory Farms, okay? Downward spiral. And I'm in this hole, truth. One group one time gave me salami and cheese as a gift. Very funny. And they knew my story. And I didn't think that was funny. I had a resentment against that group for quite a few years. So I'm in the hole. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm naked. I just gotten beat up by all these guards. And this dude opens up my cell door and says, "Chow." And I get up and I get my little tray. And I'm hurting. Everything's hurting. My hair's hurting. My sides are hurting. My knees are hurting. My eyes hurt. I'm out like this. And I feel horrible. And I'm done. I'm at the jumping off point, right? And it says in the book, when you get there, you better have a God, people. You better have a God. And I didn't. I didn't have a God. I didn't have nothing. I had alcohol, and I didn't have no alcohol because I was in the joint, and it lied to me. When I needed something, it wasn't there, and I had nothing left. I was lied to all along. And all of a sudden, I got that spork that they give you, okay? Spork. And I took this left arm here. I got a lot of prison tattoos. But I took this left arm and I cut myself with that spork. And I cut myself again and I cut myself again. And I was 21 years old. And I'm an institutional bum. And I'm an alcoholic. And all I want to do is drink. Okay? And I don't want to sing your songs in rehab. And I don't want to become your friend. I don't want to hang out with you. At this point I want to sit in the park. You feel me? I want to sit in the park and I want to drink by myself, alone, like George Thorogood. You know, I don't need nobody. I drink alone, all by myself. I don't like alcoholics. I don't like addicts. I don't like any of you people. I like me. I like John Barleycorn, and I got a relationship with John Barleycorn that's next to nothing else in the world. And I would do anything to drink. And finally, when John Barleycorn, when he wasn't there to give me the reward that I needed, I decided to kill myself. And I ended up in the infirmary of this prison, tied down to the bed. They had given me an orange jumpsuit and gave me the guards, apparently. And I was being fed intravenously by one arm, and the other arm was tied down in my two legs. When I finally woke up, I was just tied to the bed. You know, that's powerless. You guys didn't have to explain to me what powerless over alcohol was. I knew as soon as I saw that first step, I said, "I think I'm powerless over alcohol." I get it. Amen. And they undid me. They took me to a hearing inside the prison at Chester County Farms Prison, and they remanded me to do the rest of my time for the salami and cheese job, okay, in a place called Haverford State Hospital in Haverford, Pennsylvania. It's closed up now, I understand. That's who's speaking tonight. That's who pulled up in a nice Jeep Wrangler with a beautiful girlfriend. That's who this weekend, we went up to New York City to my sister and brother-in-law's house, and my little nieces, and we had gifts for all of them. I received gifts from my mama and my sister, and we hugged and loved each other. You know, that's who's speaking tonight. Why? Because of you people, not because of me. Because of God came into my life, got out of that institution. Somebody in one of those institutions that I was in, I couldn't even tell you which one, came to one of my institutions and talked about this program called AA, and he had a big book and they had a lot of teeth. And he said, "You two can get sober." My teeth were real bad because some of the things I had done. And I thought, ooh, I want teeth, you know? And you never know where you're going to get your hope at. And on October 31st of 1983, all kidding aside, I laid in the field in Kalamazoo, Michigan after having my last drink. My last drink was a full watermelon spiked with Bacardi 151 rum by myself with a half gallon of rum. And I finally got done drinking that, if you will. And I was just, I looked up in the heavens and said, "I can't do this no more. I know I'm just one drink away from a penitentiary or death." And I said, "Can you please help me?" Some AA member told me that. Just ask for help. AA entry prayer. I said, "Dear God, please help me." I prayed in disbelief. And somehow that day I got to an AA clubhouse in Kalamazoo, Michigan, on the run from the law from Philadelphia. And I came into AA on October 31st of 83. And I started going to meetings. And I didn't get along with everybody right away. I didn't fit in right away. As you can tell, I'm not like a fitter-inner type dude. You know, I'm not your normal speaker, as you can tell. And I'm not here trying to impress you with my knowledge of the steps. I'm not here to take you guys all through a new experience with the steps. Tonight, I'm here to show you my God. And that's what happens with this book. We all get a new understanding of a loving and powerful and ever omnipresent God. And from day one, he's been holding me up. I've got angels all around me. Sometimes it's in the form of AA members. Sometimes it's in the form of police officers or customers or my little daughter. You know, I'll share this with you. I was out shopping for my girlfriend on Christmas, a week before Christmas. And me and my daughter, she was working, making money. Oh, no, you were homesick, babe, remember? And me and my daughter went to Macy's. You know, I'm getting all these cute little boots for her and all this nice little stuff. And my little daughter's helping me pick stuff out. My daughter knew I had money and knew how much I had. And she picked out this blender that she wanted because she's an athlete. She's a sophomore in high school. She's a girl watching her figure. You know, you girls do that. And so she wanted this Ninja juicer for $100. And so I said the typical dad thing, no. You know, no. You don't need a juicer. It's $100. That's crazy. Well, I had $500 with me, and we got done, and I had about $85 left, at least, you know, on that card that I had. I had a little cash I was holding. And I looked at her, and I said, you really want that juicer? She said, oh, yeah, Dad, it's okay, Daddy, because we were there for like 3 hours. She was ready to go home. And I'm like, let's get the juicer, honey. She says, really? And I stopped. And, you know, dads would, I don't know if you know this, but dads with a 15-year-old girl, we lose them. I lost her at about 12. You know, she's not my little girl. She don't run up to me anymore. You know, she don't jump in my arms anymore and say, Daddy, Daddy. I'm not the best thing since sliced bread. In fact, I embarrass her at most times now. And I looked at her, and it was a daddy-daughter day. And I looked at her, and I said, Allison, you are the most important person in my life. And you don't know this, but your daddy loves you with every ounce of his body. And she started crying right there in the middle of Macy's by the, you know, juicers. And she was like, don't do this, Daddy. Don't do this, Daddy. And I said, I can't help it, honey. I know I don't tell you this enough, and I know I get mad at you, you know, for doing different things and, you know, being mean to your mommy or whatever. But I said, but I love you so much. Let's get the juicer. And so I gave him the rest of the credit card and a little bit of cash. And it was like a special moment all over a Ninja juicer. What? You know? But you never know when that stuff's going to happen. And those things happen for me today. That's a big moment. There's no amount of pomp or circumstance that a drink or any of those other things that we used to do can replace that moment. If you stay in AA long enough, you know, page 164, it says remarkable things are going to happen, not just normal things. I wouldn't be here for 31 years if this program sucked, okay? It's that simple. I can't be, I know that's not in the book, but that's the way I say it, okay? This program's crazy, man. I just went to Winchester, England to carry the message at the Winchester Cathedral. Hello. Recently I was in United States Virgin Islands at Promises from Paradise in November. You know, at a big convention and sharing with people on the beach. Fired up. Huh? Fired up. Fired up on what? Not on coffee. People that don't know me say, yo, caffeine free. Ha, ha, ha. Notation, it's God, okay? Clancy says that we get this thing called enthusiasm, and the Greek word enthusiasm is entheos, and en is within, and theos is God. And if you see a coach or a leader or a preacher, and they got that, or an AA member or a sponsor, and they got this enthusiasm, what you are witnessing is their God. It's not caffeine. I got some in me, okay, I'll cop to that. But by golly, there's more God in me than caffeine. And I submit to you that if you stay here long enough and you get active and you get in these committees and you get in these home groups, you will get that. I will submit to you further. If you're one of those people that sit in the back, if you're one of those people that don't get involved in the home group, if you're not one of those guys that really has a sponsor or sponsor people, good luck. I'll tell you what Dr. Bob says. I'll speak for him. We feel sorry for you. Because Dr. Bob in his last message says, you will get out of this program in direct proportion to your zeal. And check me. It's on most AA room walls. In direct proportion to your zeal, your fervor, and your enthusiasm. And all three of them mean about the same thing. You'll get out of this program to what you put into it. That makes sense in every other aspect of our deal. You know, if you watched the Giants on Sunday and you saw Odell Beckham Jr., you know, get 159 yards and a touchdown, he didn't get that because he didn't put nothing into it. That brother puts a lot into that, his work, right? You know, Aaron Rodgers for the Packers, and you see him, he was gimpy. He actually almost broke his leg and still threw the ball in the end zone to the wide receiver. That's not luck. That's work. That's repetition. And that's doing something over and over and studying and trying to be the best person you can be at what you do. And if you do that in here, you can have a great program. You see, my goal is to be like a candle. I just want to be a lit up candle. I want to light the road for you. You know what I mean? Great if I smell good or look good, wonderful. But my real job is to give some light. See, that's what the old timers did for me. You don't care if you know my last name. I'm not into all that stuff. You know, I don't care if you know who I am and where I'm from and quote me or any of that crap. All I care about is that you leave here tonight and say, wow, man, that dude touched me, man. You know, I think I'm going to get a little more active in the program now. I think I want to grow, get a meeting. I'm 31 years. I still run a meeting every Friday night at 9:30. You know, we still go to our home group business meeting, don't we, sweetie? I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. You know, I still go to these conventions and conferences and get active. You know, I still study the book. I'm working on an outline now with Sheldon Knapp. We're going to do a big book deal in February. And I've been working, and he's letting me set up. I'm setting it all up. It's fun. Sunday mornings at like 5 in the morning, I get up. She's like, oh, you having fun? I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Candles are lit. You know, I'm thinking about, you know, this experience we're going to create for everybody else. Can't wait. You know, I'll be completely frank with you as I get ready to close my story. I was kind of laid back tonight. Okay? I really mean that. Like, I'm afraid to really let it all out sometimes because I'm afraid I might scare a newcomer. You know, I'm afraid, like, oh, they're going to think it's a show or it's an act. It's not. It's not. It's real. This program has transformed my life. I love life today. I love what I do for a living. I love being active in life. I love, you know, my girlfriend's a sweetheart. She had to put all her makeup on when she got here because we laughed the whole way up. Just sharing, you know? And I'll probably pay for that later, but she did. She's like, oh, my mascara's all ready. Stop talking. Or something like that. And that's because why? Because we can be ourselves today. We can have fun with each other. We can have new experiences. You know, AA is not that wet blanket it says in the Living Sober and the Inside Cover. It's not that wet blanket that we thought it was going to be. If you people ain't drinking and doing all those illegal drugs, how can you be having fun? How can you go to a football game without liquored up? You know what I mean? How can you go fishing without drinking? How can you dance with a girl? Well, most of us can't anyway. But how can you dance without a drink? You can't do it. Yes, you can. And not only can you do it, you can do it. Whatever you did drinking, you can do better sober. And that's been my experience. So as I close, almost. You're good, Rob. I like you. So as I close, I hope I imparted upon you, everybody here, you know, that this don't just happen by not drinking and going to meetings. You won't find that anywhere in the book. In fact, what you will find in here is that attendance at a few meetings is a very good start, but it's a far cry from permanent, peaceful, and a contented sobriety. Nothing short of continuous action on the remaining steps will produce the desired result that we search for in here. You know, I don't want people to walk on eggshells around me. You see, I'm not one of those guys that's a wordsmith. You know, I believe that, you know, if there was a tremendous teacher walking down the road and there was two guys over here, maybe in the group of men and a couple women, and they were talking about the difference between being recovered or recovering. It's recovered. It says it 18 times in this book. It's recovering because I'm never completely recovered. And as they get into that, hopefully I'm going to look for the other guy on the other side of the road that's sitting there with his head down and he's got nowhere to go. And alcohol has him a few seconds from death. I stay away from the people that are into the letter of the law. And I go with the people that are in the spirit of Alcoholics Anonymous. AA at its core remains simple. When one alcoholic shares with another alcoholic, the fact that if you come here and a day at a time try to stay sober, that you will live a life beyond your wildest dreams. Your imagination will be fired, it says on page 152 on the left-hand side. You'll have hosts of friends all over. You'll get back with your family. You know, your imagination, it just will go on and on and on if we stay sober. And we get in the middle of AA. Notice I didn't say if you stop drinking and go on the meetings. That's a good start. But there's so much more. Don't cheat yourself. One of the common denominators of all the old-timers that I hang out with today is they're active members of Alcoholics Anonymous. My favorite teacher is a guy named Tom Ivester from Southern Pines, North Carolina. And he said, Robbie, when there's work to be done, the walls will come down. He says, if you're trying to help somebody, help them. The walls will come down. He said, when you're trying to do something in your job, just do it and trust God, and the walls will come down. Clean your house. Keep doing your steps. Keep working your steps with your new guys. Help others. By all means, help others. But when there's work to be done, the walls will come down. Never think about getting depressed or I can't do this. You know, I think in AA, I'll definitely end with this. I see that exit sign back there, that red exit sign? I think in AA, what there should be a little sign. I'll set this up. You know, we went to Starbucks on the way up here. We love our Starbucks. And in Starbucks, when you go in there, you know, it says Wi-Fi. We all know what that means, right? Wi-Fi means that you can get your little contraption and you can get on Wi-Fi. You can get on the internet. And it's free. Just come to our Starbucks and spend your money. You go on your, and it's free Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi. I think in AA, we should all start hanging signs that says, God-fi. Huh? You come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're going to God-fi you. Come here, sit your butt in a meeting, and tap into the source of God, because he's here. Now, if that bothered you talking about God, I don't care. Deal with it. Feel it in your heart tonight, because I'm going to talk about it, because he's all through the book and all through the steps. And I'm telling you what, if God just means a gift of desperation, if it means group of drunks, or if it means what it really means for me, a special group of angels that have been holding me up and giving me an opportunity to talk about this fantastic program that I would do anything for, get my card after the meeting, become a Facebook friend, become a friend for life. These guys, some of these guys, Dave and Tommy, and some of these guys, Stacy M, that I see all over, and Danny P, that I see at meetings all over, like over the years. Now, Roy, you're a new friend. Randy, you're in, you know? Let's become friends for life. Let's do this together. If we all stand together, we can let our flames be an awesome flame. Don't carry a little candle with a flickering light that can be blown out by John Barleycorn. Stand in the middle of us. Get in the middle of the herd. If you're a woman, hang out with the women. You know, do those things you guys do. Manicures and pedicures and all that neat stuff you guys do. Go to your store, whatever. It sounded good. Go to your stores and, you know, go or do your girls' things. And if you're guys, we do our things and we play cards and we do things outside of here. And then we all come back together and we recover together. You know, stay in the middle of AA. I hope I gave somebody hope here tonight. I hope that somebody just got something out of my message. And if not, it's okay. Because the big thing is I know that tonight, when I got asked by Rich to come up here, that I did my part. And I said, okay, I'll make it somehow, some way. And I made it here. And my whole way home, I'll be home probably about 12:30 or so. But when I get home, I know Kay and I will feel like we've both done our part. We did our little part tonight. And now it's your turn to take this message. And they're going to carry it to somebody else. Show a newcomer how awesome this thing is, and that together that we can all stay sober. Thank you, everybody.